Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Glad you're with us today. And pleased to be joined by Andrew Berkshire of Sportsnet, who has joined us throughout this regular season and now the playoff run for the Nashville Predators as they face elimination tonight in Game 6 up in Winnipeg. And we say hello to Andrew right now. Andrew, thank you for the time. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. I'm happy to be back.
I know you believe, for the most part, that Nashville has been the better team than Winnipeg as you watch this series. Do you still feel that way?
They're about even after the last game. I think that Winnipeg has got more breaks, for sure. You look at the first game, I think that Nashville really was the better team. They didn't work hard enough, in my opinion, to get, high-quality shots in that game. But the Jets didn't get many quality looks either. They didn't get many looks at all. And they managed to get enough to win that game. Even in game two, that Nashville won in overtime, that game should have been a rout. The Jets managed to be very opportunistic to tie that game and send it into overtime. So, you know, when you look at the goal difference in this series, which is pretty heavily tilted towards the Jets right now, I don't think that tells the story of the play in the series. I think, yes, it's a 3-2 series, and it could be 3-2 either way. And, you know, maybe the Jets have been a tiny bit better in terms of execution. But I think a lot of people are writing Nashville off in this series, and I don't think that that should be done at this point.
What do you pinpoint as to why Winnipeg has the series lead despite, you know, being pretty much even with Nashville, as you put it?
I think the depth at forward that Winnipeg has is a little bit of an advantage for them. It's one of those things where that defense depth for Nashville brought them through the playoffs last year. But at times you need that high scoring from your forwards. And I think this year Nashville is deeper at forward than they were last year. But I think the Jets are a better team than they faced at any point in the playoffs last year, including in the Stanley Cup final against the Penguins, where I thought that the Predators were the better team in that series as well. And they just didn't get the goaltending that they needed that they had the rest of the playoffs in that series. But, you know, Kyle Turris, I don't think, has been very impressive in these playoffs. And I like Kyle Turris as a player. I still think he was a great acquisition by the Predators, but he hasn't been a difference maker. I think Craig Smith looked good, but he needs that center to get him those good looks. And Kevin Fiala has looked good offensively, but as we all know, you know, with young players who are very offensively inclined, sometimes they cheat a little bit defensively and he can get caught. So unless Turris is bringing it at both ends at the center position, that second line has been a big weakness for Nashville in terms of goals, right? In terms of, you know, shot differentials, they're decent. You know, those are three really good players, but they haven't gotten it done. They haven't executed. And I think that's a big difference for Nashville. Whereas the Winnipeg Jets, all three of their top lines have been excellent at executing.
So you had Hartnell check in game four for Fiala. Preds win 2-1. He comes out of the lineup. Fiala goes back in. They lose game five. Now you've got Hartnell coming into that fourth line, Fiala back there on the second line. What do you think about those moves so far from Peter Laviolette? And how does this sort of change the way that the Preds play in this series?
I like it just because Hartnell brings a little bit of scoring touch. You know, if you need something on, like, a different look on your power play, and you need somebody to be a net front presence, Hartnell can do that. And at the same time, you're keeping Fiala in because, you know, it worked in game four, but at the same time, Hartnell at times in that game looked really good, and at times he looked a little bit slow, and he got hemmed in his own zone a little bit too often. So you have to remember he's an older player, and the game in some areas has passed him by a little bit, but he's still got that offensive touch. I don't think he's a long-term fit on a second line in a playoff series. Fiala fits that better. But having him in there on the fourth line, you can, you know, swap him in for certain shifts if you want a heavy presence in the offensive zone. It makes sense to me to go that way. I think in order to win this series, if the Nashville Predators are to win the next two games, they're going to need big contributions from that second line, and they need a lot more from Ryan Ellis, who I don't think has been very impressive in these playoffs, despite being, you know, I thought in the second half of the season, he was Nashville's best player, period. I thought he was phenomenal, but he hasn't been very good in the playoffs, and I want more from him.
Ellis and Josi and the defensive core in general, outside of P.K. Subban scoring power play goals, have just not kind of generated and started things the way that we're used to seeing them. And then when they're making mistakes on the defensive end, it really compounds things. How do you explain, I mean, how much of that is them playing poorly? How much of that is the construct of the series and what the Jets bring?
I mean, a lot of it is the Jets. They're one of the best teams at passing the puck in the offensive zone, especially through the middle of the ice. They are, I think they were the best in the league, actually. I'd have to confirm it, but they were at the very least top five. And the Predators' defense, you know, they haven't been optimal. I think we all would agree with that. I think that Josi, Subban, and Ekholm have been pretty good, but there have been some costly turnovers from all three, some costly penalties from a couple of them. But for the most part, I think they're doing their jobs. I think there's a lot of bad luck involved, too, that, you know, plays that look worse because of the result, you know, a shot block that's just missed by a hair that ends up slipping through the wickets or something. I think we'd be talking about the defense core a little bit differently if we had the Pekka-Rinne of the regular season throughout this series, or even, you know, the Pekka-Rinne of game four playing this whole series. He's been kind of hit and miss, and I don't want to put it all on him because I think that it's not. The Nashville Predators need to be better in front of him as well. But I don't think on a, like, two games in a row, we haven't seen the good Pekka-Rinne. We've seen a very inconsistent version, and the Predators need better than that.
Andrew Berkshire of Sportsnet, our guest. Who has been Nashville's best player in this series?
Ooh, that's tough. Maybe Philippe Forsberg. I think you look at some of the chances that he's got, especially on the power play. P.K. Subban and Ryan Johansson have been setting him up for a lot of really good looks on that half-boards or half-wall shot. And he's just, you know, hit the post, I think, four or five times. He's just missed the net by a hair a few times. So, you know, a couple of those go in, and we're probably talking about this series in a different way. I really liked him. I think Ryan Johansson's been excellent in this series. He's made some great defensive plays. He's made some amazing offensive plays as well. He's the Predators' best playmaker by far. So I think those are the two guys to me that have stepped up the most. Victor Arvidsson has been good. You know, he's Victor Arvidsson, but I think he was a little bit better or more impactful early in the series and late in the series against the Avalanche.
Andrew, I know we all expected this matchup to be a 6 or 7 game fistfight of a series. Has this been exactly as you envisioned?
I think it's not as hostile as I thought it would be because, you know, usually any series that involves, you know, P.K. Subban, Dustin Byfuglien, those two guys get on people's nerves. And I think both teams have done a pretty good job of reining it in and not, you know, they've been playing the hockey between the whistles, which personally I appreciate because I don't love the after the whistle stuff. So I thought it was going to be a little bit messier, and it hasn't been. It's just been good hockey. So
does that style favor Nashville if it were like that?
No, I think it would favor Winnipeg. They're okay. A little bit bigger, a little bit rougher. So I think that the way that it's played, it's kind of been on an even keel. So I don't think that Nashville necessarily wants to do the fighting and the post-whistle scrums. And more penalties also probably favors Winnipeg as well, because as we know, the Predators haven't really been clicking too well on the penalty kill.
What in this series has surprised you? Is there an aspect that you thought would definitely be there, other than maybe it's more civil than what you thought? That just has not been there through five games so far.
I would say I'm a little bit surprised at how well the Nashville Predators have actually penetrated the Winnipeg defense down in the low slot. It's an area where the Predators struggled to get to against the Colorado Avalanche, but they've been really good at getting those high danger chances in on Hellebuck, and they just haven't been, you know, rewarded in kind. So I think it's hard to predict any kind of changing in the percentages in a 7-game series because it's such a small amount of games. But if, you know, everything is right in the world and everything is fair, the Predators are due for a few more goals than they've scored.
In the 2-1 win up there, they got the lead, and then that enabled them to clog up the neutral zone. I mean, that seems reliant on having the lead. So what can they do to kind of slow things down if they don't have the lead, or how imperative is it if they want to play that style that they jump ahead?
Yeah, one of the things that I've noticed with Winnipeg is they've been very aggressive in forechecking down on Nashville's defensemen and trying to force them into not making plays. And at the same time, Nashville has not really pushed the Jets defensemen, who are not as mobile and excellent at puck moving as the Predators defensemen are. So they've kind of just, you know, exited their zone without much trouble. I think the Predators need to really establish a forecheck that can punish those guys and, you know, get on Dustin Byfuglien's nerves, tire him out a little bit. You know, he's not 25 years old anymore. Dustin Byfuglien's in his 30s. So, you know, get on him, make him angry, make him, you know, tired out. Get on some of their defensemen who aren't as good with the puck. Tyler Myers, guys like that who, you know, they're big, but they're not the best puck movers. They're not the swiftest. So I think they can establish a good forecheck and start creating some more turnovers. One of the areas that Nashville's been really good in this series is creating turnovers in the neutral zone. So if they continue to do that and then ramp up their forecheck, you know, in the offensive zone as well, you're going to see a little more chances coming.
You know, what surprised me, Andrew, in this series so far is you see the Preds, they have experience on their side. And you're talking a lot about how, you know, every game, the result hasn't necessarily been how the game has been played out. But now twice in this series, you've had a stretch of play where the Preds have been disastrous. And I'm talking about that 3-minute stretch in game three where they give up three goals and a 3-0 lead. A little bit longer of a stretch, but a horrible stretch in game five where they give up four goals in a short amount of time. When you're looking at these little individual stretches of individual games in this series and how Winnipeg has dominated in those stretches, is it more of what the Preds are not doing in those stretches, or is it more simply a byproduct of how Winnipeg plays and how explosive they are?
It's one of those situations where it's got to be both, but it's hard to figure out which one it is more. I mean, the Jets are so lethal offensively and they're so opportunistic. It seems like they can kind of sleep most of the game away, and if you don't have a 5-goal lead, you know, they can come back on you pretty easily. But, you know, the Predators, you can't absolve them of any fault either. There have been times in this series where, like you said, they've kind of sat back and been alarmed by the Jets' speed and kind of ran around the zone not knowing what to do. So it's got to be both of them. I'm not sure what's up with the Predators, because I think everyone in Nashville would agree that this team on paper and in the regular season was better than the addition that we saw last year. The roster is better. I think a lot of the strategies they employ are better. But in this playoffs, we have not seen, you know, 2-3 games in a row the Predators of last season's playoffs show up where, you know, they're going to come at you every game the same way consistently. It seems like they just can't manage to capture that lightning in a bottle that they had last year. And, you know, sometimes that happens. You don't have the perfect playoffs every year. But I guess it's one of those things where even if the Predators end up losing this series, you can't be too discouraged because, you know, the Winnipeg Jets are a great great team as well. But there just hasn't been that same, maybe it's confidence they had last year. But, you know, maybe that guarantee from PK Subban at the end of the game in Game 5 maybe gives that confidence back if they're able to come out to a hot start.
I imagine you expected more from Line A heading into this series. What were your expectations coming in, and why has he been as quiet as he has?
Yeah, I mean, you always expect a lot from him. He's an unbelievable goal scorer. The thing about Patrick Line A is he shoots from further out than pretty much any elite goal scorer in the NHL in the last 5 years. He relies on his shot, which is ridiculous. His release is so quick and so elusive for goaltenders to track. But one of the things that the Minnesota Wild before and the Predators in this series have done is checked passes to Laine. He's very good at one-timing the puck, and they have stopped him from getting the puck in scoring position. So he likes to sit on the edge of the slot on the top of the circle there. And if you stop those passes from coming to him, or like just interrupt them enough that you can't get out of one timer, you limit a lot of his scoring ability. And the Predators have done a great job of that. Unfortunately, they also have to contend with the Mark Scheifele's of the world and Blake Wheeler and Kyle Connor and all those other guys. So it hasn't necessarily changed the series, but they've done a great job shutting down Line A.
How much coverage is the PK Subban guarantee getting up in Canada right now?
A lot, I think, because he's done this twice before and both times it's worked. So he did it in Game 7 against the Boston Bruins in 2014, which was probably one of his most famous moments as a Montreal Canadian. He said that he couldn't wait to get down to Boston and hear the noise of the crowd and take it all away from them. And then he did it last year in the Stanley Cup Final, saying that they would win the two games in Nashville. So it's one of those things where everyone kind of gets excited and hopes that maybe they do it again, because then, you know, you're 3-for-3. That's pretty impressive. And then there's the people who don't like him, who are angry and saying he's arrogant. And I just love that he has the confidence in his team to say that. And, you know, hopefully it works out for him, just because I find it's much more fun of a story.
Andrew Berkshire, our guest. Do you favor either Nashville or Winnipeg against Vegas in the Western Conference Final?
I think that the Central is a much tougher division than the Pacific. And, you know, I don't want to be too, brushing off of Vegas, because they've been amazing. But I think that either team that wins this series will end up in the Stanley Cup Final.
Let's just say Vegas goes on and wins a Stanley Cup in year one, which is something that it just totally disgusts me to think about. what is the conversation with you and your colleagues around hockey, that a system has been presented by the NHL where an expansion team can win a Stanley Cup in year one? What does that discussion turn to at that point?
I mean, for me, I think it would be a great story, simply because what it tells me is that nobody in the NHL actually knows what they're doing, and it's all just random. Because at a certain point, if a team of cast-offs can win the Stanley Cup in year one, that's a huge indictment of everybody else running a team, right? And
it's a great point.
You might be flipping Chad, who said he's swearing off the NHL if Vegas wins more games. Hey,
this is another reason to swear off the NHL, is what he's saying.
There's a beauty in the randomness, is what you're saying, though, right? Kind of a beauty.
I would say maybe it's time for the NHL to evolve, if that's something that happens, right? Get some people who aren't former players in charge.
I love you, Andrew. Spot on your analysis right now.
It pushes things forward. I mean, there can be some good that comes out.
Don't we want to know, though? Like, and Andrew, you're great about the numbers and trying to break down what exactly is happening. There's some security in watching something and feeling like you know what's going on. And to me, Vegas winning the Stanley Cup shows me that there's way too much randomness in hockey. And like you said, maybe there's some GMs who don't really know what they're doing across the league. A bunch of them.
Yeah, I think that it would say too much. And I mean, there was an article that came out a couple years ago, I think, talking about the randomness of different sports. And of all the four major professional North American sports, hockey had the most randomness. It was they estimated that it was like 50% of the outcomes were based on randomness and not skill. And that's definitely too much. So maybe there's some changes in the fundamentals of what determines hockey games that we need to change in order to prevent an expansion team from winning a Stanley Cup in year one. But then again, at the same time, how much better of a situation could the NHL have written if there was a storybook than an expansion team? You know, that you never know how financially viable they are. Year one, they win the Stanley Cup, Vegas will be in that, like, the Golden Knights will be in Vegas forever, because that would be unbelievable for that fan base.
So I want to extend this conversation, because I'm very into sports being what they are and embracing what they are. I'm a baseball guy that hates that baseball is expanding the playoffs. It has a one-game playoff at the beginning after a 162-game season, right? They're different. They should embrace them being different. I like the randomness of hockey. It's part of what makes it different to me, is that you can't go into the playoffs and say the President's Trophy winner is a heavy favorite. You look at the stretch of President's Trophy winners not getting it done, and I like that, except that this year my team's the President's Trophy winner, so it's not that convenient for me.
Yeah, it'd be nice if just this one year it was that predetermined thing, right?
Right.
But I mean, I don't know. This is probably a broader topic that we're using with you right now on with us, Andrew, but also I start to think, if 50% of the outcomes are random, what is the real value of winning a President's Trophy, even?
Yeah, I mean, that's That's the main question, right? Is like in the playoffs could even be more random, right? We don't know. We have to study that. So it's one of those situations where, to me, I think there needs to be some sort of reward for building a good team. You don't necessarily have to win every year or anything, but I look at a team like, you know, the San Jose Sharks, that over the last, let's say, 15 years, they're probably the team in the NHL that has the most wins, but they've never won. They've only been to the finals once. I feel like a team like that over 15 years should probably have a Stanley Cup. But, you know, you can't control things like that. And maybe that's part of the beauty of the NHL, like you were saying, but maybe it should be just a tiny bit less random.
Andrew Berkshire, our guest. Finally, Andrew, as you think of the likely outcomes of this particular series between Nashville and Winnipeg, do you actually see the Predators winning two games in a row against the Jets?
Oh, I think it could easily happen. Two games is not that much, and these teams are so even. You know, it's Pekarinen could steal two games. You know, we've seen him do it all season long. He was the best goalie in the regular season. Capture that in a bottle for two games, you're good. You know, any player could have a phenomenal couple games and, you know, lead the Predators over. I don't think it's unlikely at all. It's probably, you know, you're looking at a 45% to 55% chance, you know, 55% for the Jets. But it's one of those situations where even if the Predators go out tonight, this was a phenomenal even series that both teams should be proud of playing in, because it was an excellent series to watch. And, you know, these two teams are probably going to meet up in the playoffs every year for quite a few years here. So that's the other thing to look at, is neither of these teams are particularly old. So it's going to be exciting for the next few years.
And we speak a lot on of Pekka here, but has Hellebuck been the difference in this series so far?
I think Hellebuck's been okay. I don't think either goaltender has been a game breaker for their team. I think he's been all right. He's been a little bit better than Rene, but I don't think he's the difference maker. I think the Jets scorers have been the difference maker. And, you know, we haven't seen as much offense out of the Predators defensemen as we expect in these playoffs, outside of Subban on the power play. I'm still kind of shocked based on how well Roman Josi's played that he doesn't have a goal. So maybe here's my prediction for tonight. Roman Josi is the game breaker.
Andrew, thank you for the insight. We love the conversations.
Yeah, great visit.
Me too. I enjoy coming on with you guys every time.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks, Andrew Berkshire. Follow him on Twitter. It's real simple. At Andrew Berkshire is where you can find him there of sports, and he's excellent.
50% of the outcomes come down to randomness.
No. I agree. It's too much. But I stand firm on the randomness being something that makes hockey different, and me liking the four major sports being different. I embrace the differentness. Now, that's too different. I'll agree with that. Let's get it to something. But also, you would think it would drive change, like analytic change, where somebody says, hey, this isn't working the way we do it. We got to tear it up. And is there a sample NHL franchise that's doing that? You don't hear about somebody like the Houston Rockets, who are looking at things completely different, or the A's did.
There's going to be a lot of GMs looking in the mirror if Vegas wins a Stanley Cup. Based on his point there, it's going to be a lot of looking around, self-evaluating about what you're doing as a franchise if Vegas can win a Stanley Cup in year one.